Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam answered and he said that when fate is decided, the wide space becomes narrow. Now, of course, this has different interpretations. Many scholars have given different kind of interpretations about this. Of course, one interpretation is that when, because fate is not such that it has nothing to do with the individual itself. So, for example, you know, if I continue to commit actions to a point where there is no return, then yes, at that point, fate is now decided. Except for, of course, if the Almighty Allah decides to change that fate for whatever reason. And of course, we accept this because the Almighty Allah is all-knowing, all-hearing, and He is all-wise, He is all-knowledgeable. But when one does something to the point of no return, then yes, fate is decided. And then that wide space that you had before, it becomes narrow. If we take something as simple as our health, right? If we start to continuously eat junk food on a very regular basis, then that wide space that we had of health will start to become narrow until eventually we start to become sick. And after we become sick, of course, now fate is becoming decided. Eventually, we lead ourselves to our own death. Other interpretations about this from some of the great religious scholars is that when Allah determines to take the life of someone, then fate here is talking about the fate of death. So that when fate is decided and the time of death is finalized and Allah determines to take the life of someone, then the space, in spite of its greatness, becomes narrow for that individual, meaning that there is no way to escape from that fate which has been decided. Very interesting statement here by the divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, as to regarding fate and how wide spaces become narrow. Regardless, whatever interpretation you take, the common denominator is that when fate is decided by the Almighty Allah, then of course there is no way to escape, and that wide space that was previously there becomes incredibly narrow. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
From our Imams, the ninth Imam is the first, whose Imamat began at a very young age, about 8 or 9 years old. Basically, look at the special wisdom that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given to our ninth Imam. What is zinat? Beauty. But let us go to the hadith of the Imam, where Imam talks about a zinat in a very different level. وَحُسْنُ الْعَدَبْ زِينَةُ الْعَقْلِ Good manners is beauty for intelligence. Now, it's a discussion by itself, who is intelligent, who is not intelligent. We don't want to go into that. But the Imam is saying, if a person who is intelligent, you know, one of the beauty of such a person would be that his manners would be good. You know, there's a narration again in the life of the ninth Imam, and this is where you see the continuity in the guidance. Even though one Imam was not present at the time of the other Imam, there was a companion common to 8th and 9th Imam. And he says, once I went to the 8th Imam and he gave me something. And I took it. While I was leaving, Imam stopped and he says, why didn't you say Alhamdulillah? You know, you got something. Thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Time passed. It was 8th Imam's time and he goes to him. Something similar happens and Imam gave him something. And he immediately said, Alhamdulillah. Now the narration doesn't say that the ninth Imam was there in the first. He just turned to him, the Imam, and he says, Ta'addabta. Now you have acquired the adab and good manners.
Thank you. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Several days ahead of the holy month of Ramadan, Kabul residents flocked to the city center to purchase food and necessities for fasting. Afghan markets usually witness a spike in food prices before Ramadan, but this year the situation is much more challenging. Many Afghan families are running short of food amid deepening inflation, unemployment, famine, and poverty.
Ramadan is a blessed month, and Muslims do their best to make full and special preparations. Unfortunately, this year, people are facing an economic decline with little purchasing power. They need rice, flour, oil, beans, egg, and dairy, but many will have to rely on a piece of bread and water this Ramadan.
I was employed only 4 months out of this entire year. I didn't have an income for 8 months. Today, I came to the city center to buy some food items in preparation for fasting the month of Ramadan. But as I saw the prices, I felt like I can't afford anything. The prices have skyrocketed and our cash has less value than before. I think this Ramadan will be the hardest.
This is the second Ramadan since the Taliban took power in August last year, following the catastrophic withdrawal of the U.S. The country's heavily aid-dependent economy, mostly funded by international donors, has been in chaos since the Western countries suspended humanitarian aid and froze Afghan assets.
We used to have an aid-dependent economy. After the political change, it started to crumble as the Western countries cut their aid. Furthermore, economic sanctions and banking restrictions were imposed on Afghanistan. This resulted in people losing their jobs and many factories and small businesses shutting down. In my opinion, the West is committing a crime against humanity in Afghanistan, pushing millions to starvation and death.
According to the United Nations Response Plan, in 2023, two-thirds of the Afghan population need humanitarian assistance. That's a record number of 28.3 million people. This will require funding of $4.6 billion, making it the highest humanitarian requirement in the world. Ramadan is a month of celebration, unity, and compassion. But people in Afghanistan will mark the holy month under the shadow of multiple crises. They are awaiting solidarity and support from the international community. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
A scandal involving a Quran desecration at a school in northern England has continued to escalate, despite the resolution of the affair by the local community. With a local mosque and its imam facing a sustained onslaught by right-wingers in the press and government too. Hafez Mohammed Mateen Anwar played a prominent role in easing tensions after news spread across the community of a Quran desecration by students at Kettlethorpe High School in Wakefield. When the news went viral, talk of an alleged death threat and a street protest erupted. Mateen Anwar offered up his mosque to the school and police as a location for a community meeting, an opportunity to clear the air, lay out the facts, and end the matter once and for all.
So behind me is the local mosque where the meeting took place. Now, as far as the local Muslim community are concerned, the situation was dealt with amicably and ended on good terms, with communication playing a big part in making the difference. However, it seems as if the government and also certain right-wing elements within mainstream media appear to be deeply unhappy with the way the story played out.
The meeting successfully resolved the affair, with police, the school head teacher and one of the students' mothers all in attendance. But instead of celebrating the peaceful conclusion, the British press ran with inflammatory interpretations of the story.
The police acted, recorded it as a non-crime hate incident, and the boys were, the four pupils were suspended. So that shows that we now have de facto blasphemy laws in the UK.
The mosque is now under investigation by a charity watchdog, while Mateen Anwar has been accused of stoking the row. He is also being portrayed as an extremist over Islamic views he's expressed in the past. Press TV spoke with the embattled imam, who blasted the media for peddling misinformation, such as forcing the mother of a student to attend and apologise.
What's the purpose of that meeting? The purpose of that meeting, Robert, was to let the community know that what you're seeing on social media, these lies, they're not true. Out of those students, one of their mothers, in fact, contacted our team on her own accord and explained how she felt. And she, in fact, herself invited our team to her home address by her own choice. The mother attended the mosque and wanted to sort of relate to the community about how she felt. A number of points were addressed on that meeting, which then led to a really amicable conclusion to this. There's a number of statements I've come across, statements from ministers, statement from the education minister himself, and a number of other political figures, people of media background, who have sadly just followed onto this tangent of lies and continue to progress that further without actually trying to investigate the truth, which is sad. It's really a sad reality that they've not actually investigated what went about. We were successful, Robert, in stopping a demonstration which could have led to further incidents. We were responsible for the reinstation of the children back into the school.
The imam added he's exploring legal options to challenge what he says is an Islamophobic smear campaign against him by right-wing elements who are deeply unhappy with British Muslims successfully standing up for their faith. Robert Carter, Wakefield.
People in the Gaza Strip rallied in front of the Red Cross office on Monday to mark this year's Palestinian Wounded Persons Day. The annual event pays tribute to Palestinians who have got injured during Israeli wars and aggressions. Thousands of injured Palestinians suffer from permanent disabilities caused by Israel. Wounded Palestinians say Israel's crimes will continue to go unpunished as long as the regime is under the protection of Western countries.
Our injuries always remind us of the criminal Zionist enemy who left us scarred for life. The Israeli crimes against the Palestinian people started in 1948 and continue to take place until this day. The world, especially the Western countries, must stop assisting the Israeli regime.
During the 2014 war on Gaza, Israeli forces killed over 2,200 Gazans, including women and children, and injured more than 11,000. In May of 2021, over 2,200 Palestinians were injured, including 685 children and 480 women. The wounded people in Gaza are also suffering from the Israeli blockade, which has created a harsh humanitarian situation in the region.
Gaza Strip, during the last years, witnessed different escalation, which caused so many wounded people who are suffering due to their injuries, severe injuries, and in the same time, the socioeconomic conditions due to the blockade.
Wounded Palestinians in the blockaded territory struggled to cope with their injuries due to a lack of specialized medical facilities to cater for their needs.
We are calling on the international community in order to exert pressure on Israel, first, to stop its offensive on the Palestinian people, and also to end this illegal blockade, to let in the medical instruments and equipments and medicine to Gaza Strip in order to help these people who are in bad need for surgeries and medical treatments.
Medics say Israel's use of unconventional weapons during its wars and aggressions has increased the number of severe injuries among Palestinians.
Israeli regime forces have killed and maimed thousands of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, including women and children, since 2008. Experts say the international community must end its apathy to Israeli crimes. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
A comprehensive cooperation roadmap aimed at expanding bilateral relations and seven MOUs to boost trade and cooperation in transportation, agricultural, and cultural fields. The result of Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko's two-day visit to Tehran, celebrating three decades of close ties between Iran and Belarus.
The visit can be considered a turning point in our bilateral relations. It's an opportunity to share our experiences. We have made remarkable progress despite the sanctions, and we have turned threats into opportunities. We are ready to share our experiences with our friend Belarus.
We are both on the same page. We both agree that a multipolar world is emerging. Iran has made great achievements despite Western sanctions and has turned into an important player in the region and the international arena. There's a lot that we can do together.
The high-level talks between the two sides also included a pledge to increase trade volume to $100 million per year.
Both countries are determined to improve their relations and trade. The economic relations between Iran and Belarus are not comparable to the past.
This is the third visit ever to Tehran by a Belarusian president and the first in 17 years.
Belarus and Iran enjoy strong relations, which is reflected in frequent high-level meetings and various agreements. Belarusian officials have described Iran as a strong partner for their country in the region and in the world. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
A leading critic of Israeli aggression against Palestinians, David Miller, who was sacked from his professorship at the University of Bristol in 2021 after a sustained campaign by Britain's Israel lobby targeting him, has addressed a group of Iranian students at the IRIB University in Tehran. He said Western spy agencies in association with the Western media outlets are to be blamed for unrests and riots in various countries, including Syria.
And MI6 also played a key role in the creation of the Free Syria Army and what was termed in British propaganda terms the moderate armed opposition in Syria. And the most shocking thing, I think, is the involvement in the managed massacre of captives in order to present evidence of chemical weapons attacks by the Syrian government.
Moreover, Miller said that the recent unrests, which erupted in some parts of Iran following the death of a young woman, were orchestrated in advance by the United States and the Israeli regime.
The hybrid war strategy against Iran, against so many other enemy states, is led by the United States via a myriad of assets and outlets. One of the key elements is what might be called the small media strategy. U.S. funds are channeled directly and indirectly to a variety of independent media and citizen journalism or media defense organizations.
Miller, who is also the producer of Palestine Declassified show on Press TV, has repeatedly come under attack by Israeli lobbies in the UK for supporting Palestine and revealing the true face of Israeli regime and its Western allies.
Although David Miller has been sacked from university and has been repeatedly pressured by Israeli lobbies, and there are efforts underway to undermine and smear his name and reputation, he believes such attacks will simply strengthen his resolve to continue the fight. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
(laughs)
creating a world where untold stories are told and unheard voices are heard. The annual IRIB World Service News Awards, dubbed SOAP Media Festival, this year had a lot to celebrate.
It's been a few years that the dynamics are changing and the new world order is emerging. The unipolar world is now turning into a multipolar world. Iran is in a position where it can speed up this process and offer a third viewpoint different from the two narratives that have always existed.
Words that clarify the mission of IRIB World Service. And this is exactly why the Arabic news channel Al Alam swept the IRIB World Service News Awards, taking home wins in nearly every major category, with its sister channel Al Alam Syria TV maintaining frontrunner status with its popular talk show Zoom Room.
We are proud to be able to gain a strong foothold in Syria and West Asia in particular by shedding light on the truth and covering stories that are untold about people who have been misrepresented.
I've been with Al Alam for more than 8 years now. I have hosted many TV programs. It's great to be part of a team where the goal is to bring truth to light.
Meanwhile, the Spanish-language news channel Hispan TV, as well as Press TV, were seen as the gold standard of achievement in the television community, winning awards in different sections, including the Best Documentary and the Best News Website. Not to mention that Press TV's Palestine Declassified won the Best Political TV Show.
This is the moment we're in. We're in the end, the dying throes of U.S. hegemony. And as he was saying, I very much agree with, the cultural infrastructure for the ending of hegemony has to be put in place, and that involves media, including news and journalism, which can give a different view on how the world is operating and tell more of the truth about the world. So, you know, the media play a central, important role in all that.
Press TV correspondent Johnny Miller, who has covered the most difficult news stories, including the Rohingya crisis and the developments in Ukraine over the past year, was not left out.
I think two of my heroes, Noam Chomsky and John Pilger, said that they've never seen as much propaganda in the war in Ukraine than in any war that they've reported on or written about, and they've reported right back from Vietnam. So that's telling you a lot. And there's a huge amount of propaganda on Ukraine, indeed. Ukraine is it's a civil war, but it's also a proxy war between Russia and NATO. And I think you're seeing the beginning of this split between the West and the East, China, Russia, Iran. And we're seeing a challenge to American hegemony and indeed the creation of this new multipolar world.
And according to the head of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, IRIB World Service is at the forefront of this propaganda war.
In this unequal war, where IRIB World Service has none of the advantages of mainstream media, from state-of-the-art technology to political support, it has been able to blaze a new trail. The fact that its news channels are frequently banned on different social media platforms is testimony to that. Meanwhile, this also proves in practice that the free flow of information and free speech are nothing more than slogans that are used as political tools by advocates of democracy.
Media play a key role in today's world. They can set the tone for diplomatic endeavors, and they are a tool of international communication. Particularly for the Islamic Republic of Iran, its media outlet can pave the way for diplomacy.
That is why there are great expectations, which means that so far, IRIB World Service has been able to deliver on its responsibilities.
In a world where mainstream media is setting the narrative, IRIB World Service has been able to break the monopoly and offer a new perspective. Gizumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
South Koreans opposed to upcoming joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises took their message to the presidential office. They worry the largest such drills in almost 5 years could lead to direct conflict.
Where did all the efforts for dialogue for each other go? We must stop the terrible threat that will actually lead to the devastation of nuclear war. We have to stop the battle without an exit. That's why we're here.
Last year, North Korea test launched a record number of ballistic missiles, with the U.S. and South Korea routinely conducting their own missile tests and smaller military drills.
The large-scale joint U.S.-South Korean military exercises had been suspended under previous President Moon Jae-in. But that's not the policy of current President Yoon Suk-yeol, who seeks to strengthen the alliance with the United States with the frequent deployment of U.S. nuclear-capable forces.
The drills are set to include both computer-simulated war games and field exercises. North Korea views the drills as a rehearsal for invasion.
Currently, the South Korea-U.S. joint military exercise is going ahead, generating aggressive tension, and includes a preemptive strike scenario. Wherever there is such a military exercise, tensions on the Korean Peninsula increase.
More large-scale drills with the U.S. are planned for this year, as President Yoon seeks to celebrate the 70th anniversary of South Korea's alliance with the United States. Frank Smith, Seoul.
A ribbon-cutting ceremony to go down in history, opening the production line of Iran's first homegrown jet trainer, Yasin. According to Iran's Defense Minister Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Ashtiani, the jet trainer is capable of carrying out combat missions as well as other tactical aerial warfare actions such as close air support or CAS. Air-to-ground actions against hostile targets in close proximity of friendly forces.
Training good pilots is extremely important, and now with this homegrown jet trainer, we have technologically evolved significantly. This is considered a major step for our Air Force. The training period will now be shorter and more comprehensive.
Prior to this, jet pilot training was done outside Iran, and due to Western and U.S. sanctions, Iranian pilots could not receive training abroad.
We did ask for assistance, but no country in the world helped us. However, at the end of the day, it worked out for the best because we were able to develop the technology that we needed ourselves. Knowledge-based companies help us a lot. In particular, I have to point out the design of the engine and also its aerodynamic design. All in all, Yasin is about 800 kilometers lighter than our first prototype, which is a significant achievement.
Iran started designing jet trainers over 10 years ago. Yasin is the second generation of a prototype that was unveiled in 2019. The new version now includes state-of-the-art avionics, engine, landing gear, and full cockpit devices.
With all the equipment installed, this training jet is fully equipped and it can be used for training pilots in all different levels.
But there's more to Yasin than just training fighter jet pilots.
It is also a question of prestige. This jet trainer was made by our own scientists and inventors. Knowledge-based companies played a very important part. Obviously, it means great economic benefits, but other than that, it shows that we can stand on our own feet. This is the most important message.
In the next 2 years, three more Yasin jet trainers will be produced based on the requirements of Iran's Air Force.
Iran has made great achievements in the field of aviation, and this is a symbol of self-sufficiency of the Islamic Republic. Gisumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
Oh.
دین خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد اینها چیزایی لازم نیست
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones
من فی ذلك لا
اما این کافی نیست
But it's not enough
نقیم الدین ولا تتفرقوا فیه
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن دوری از قرآن از قرآن
Muslims major problem is losing touch with the Quran Quran Quran
کتاب الله
In the limelight.
The collapse of Silicon Valley Bank could have devastating effect across the technology industry in the short term, as most of the companies that deposited their money in the bank are struggling to pay their employees. We take a look at some of the world media and press's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Associated Press News Agency has covered this story and tells us more. Regulators rushed on Friday, 10th of March, to seize the assets of one of Silicon Valley's top banks, marking the largest failure of a U.S. financial institution since the height of the financial crisis almost 15 years ago. Silicon Valley Bank, the nation's 16th largest bank, failed after depositors hurried to withdraw their money in recent days, and with anxiety over the bank's health. It was the second biggest bank failure in U.S. history after the collapse of Washington Mutual in 2008. The bank served mostly technology workers and venture capital-backed companies, including some of the industry's best-known brands. There appeared to be little chance of the chaos spreading in the broader banking sector, as it did in the months leading up to the Great Recession. The biggest banks, those most likely to cause an economic meltdown, have healthy balance sheets and plenty of capital. According to the bank's website, nearly half of the U.S. technology and healthcare companies that went public last year after getting early funding from venture capital firms were Silicon Valley Bank customers. The bank also boasted of its connections to leading technology companies such as Shopify, ZipRecruiter, and one of the top venture capital firms, Andreessen Horowitz. Internet television provider Roku was among casualties of the bank collapse. It said in a regulatory filing on Friday that about 26% of its cash, or $487 million, was deposited at the Silicon Valley Bank. Roku said its deposits with Silicon Valley Bank were largely uninsured, and it didn't know to what extent it would be able to recover them. As part of the seizure, California bank regulators and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC, transferred the bank's assets to a newly created institution, the Deposit Insurance Bank of Santa Clara. The new bank will start paying out insured deposits in the coming days. Then the FDIC and California regulators plan to sell off the rest of the assets to make other depositors whole. There was unease in the banking sector all week, with shares tumbling by double digits. The news of Silicon Valley Bank's distress pushed shares of almost all financial institutions even lower on Friday, 10th of March. The failure arrived with incredible speed. Some industry analysts suggested on Friday that the bank was still a good company and a wise investment. Meanwhile, Silicon Valley Bank executives were trying to raise capital and find additional investors. However, trading in the bank's shares was halted before the stock market's opening bell due to extreme volatility. Shortly before noon, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation moved to shutter the bank. Notably, the agency did not wait until the close of business, which is the typical approach. The FDIC could not immediately find a buyer for the bank's assets, signaling how fast depositors had cashed out. Agence France-Presse has also covered this story and tells us more. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen on Sunday, 12th of March, said the government wanted to avoid financial contagion from the implosion of the Silicon Valley Bank, but ruled out a bailout of the institution. U.S. regulators on Friday, 10th of March, took control of Silicon Valley Bank, a key lender to U.S. startups since the 1980s. After a run on deposits made it no longer tenable for the medium-sized bank to stay afloat on its own. Investors punished the banking sector in total on Thursday, 9th of March, after Silicon Valley Bank's disclosure the day before. But by Friday, shares in some larger banks posted gains. However, regional lenders remained under pressure, including First Republic Bank, which slumped nearly 30% in two sessions on Thursday and Friday, and Signature Bank, a cryptocurrency-exposed lender, which has lost a third of its value since Wednesday evening, 8th of March. In an interview with CBS Sunday, Janet Yellen said the U.S. government wanted to make sure that the troubles that exist at one bank don't create contagion to others that are sound. She added that the government was working with the U.S. Deposit Guarantee Agency, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, on a resolution of the situation at Silicon Valley Bank, where approximately 96% of deposits are not covered by the FDIC's reimbursement guarantee. She claimed, "I'm sure that the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation are considering a wide range of available options that include acquisitions." Virginia Democratic Senator Mark Warner said in an interview with ABC on Sunday that the best outcome would be to find a buyer for Silicon Valley Bank before markets open in Asia. Futures contracts on the flagship indices of the Tokyo and Hong Kong stock exchanges were pointing to an opening decline of just under 2%. Since Friday, there have been calls from the technology and finance sectors for a bailout. Janet Yellen said that reforms made after the 2008 financial crisis meant the government was not considering this option for Silicon Valley Bank. She said, "During the financial crisis, there were investors and owners of systemic large banks that were bailed out. And the reforms that have been put in place means that we're not going to do that again." Following the 2008 failure of Lehman Brothers and the ensuing financial meltdown, U.S. regulators required major banks to hold additional capital in case of trouble. U.S. and European authorities also organized regular stress tests designed to uncover vulnerabilities at the largest banks. National Public Radio, NPR, has also covered this story. The collapse of the U.S. Silicon Valley Bank, said to be the largest bank failure since the 2008 Washington Mutual financial crisis, has left startups re-questioning their future as the crash sends jolts across the global financial markets. Silicon Valley Bank failed after depositors hurried to withdraw money over concerns of a liquidity crisis. Stephanie Ruhl, a senior business analyst with NBC, tweeted that the startup companies are in deep trouble following the collapse of the Silicon Valley Bank. She said in a tweet, "Silicon Valley Bank was one of the biggest providers of venture debt to startup businesses. Oftentimes, as a requirement, startups had to keep their main bank account with Silicon Valley Bank. Those companies are in deep trouble unless they got all their dollars out in over the last few days." Shelf Engine, a 40-person startup founded in 2015 that uses artificial intelligence to help grocery stores reduce food waste, had its investors' money deposited into Silicon Valley Bank, just like the billions of dollars belonging to companies and investors that the bank held. The startup's chief executive officer and co-founder, Stefan Kalb, had been following news of the Silicon Valley Bank and had immediately opened an account at JP Morgan Chase just to attempt to transfer every last penny out of the sinking financial institution. After making continuous attempts of withdrawing $42 billion from the bank on Thursday, 9th of March, Kalb hoped that the transfer would have been successful. But to his nightmare, it was not. Apart from the US, the bank failure also sent its waves to countries like Britain. In Britain, the Finance Ministry and the Bank of England said they are working together to minimize the disruptions that may arise from the collapse of the UK section of the Silicon Valley Bank.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi.
Shahid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr.
He was born in Qadhimiyya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was.
When we look at the works of late Rawzati, we see.
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamari that he says in Farsi, "Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid."
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRib English Radio, Call of Islam page. We're welcome to another episode of the program, The Teacher, an introduction into the thoughts and works of the most outstanding Muslim Shiite personalities and scholars all across the world of Islam. I am Atta, the host of this program. I have two very special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom for today's discussion, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi and Shaykh Rouhani. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu
alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Okay, for today's discussion, we want to talk about one of the most outstanding muhaddisi, mufassirin, mutakallimin, and fuqaha of the 6th century Hijra. He is no one but Sayyid ibn Hibatullah Ravandi Kashani, mainly known as Qutbuddin Ravandi. There are so many books written by this outstanding man, Fiqh al-Quran, Al-Kharaj, and Jara'ih. Of course, we'll get to these books, but before that, let's be more familiar with the early life of Qutbuddin Ravandi. Sheikh Rouhani, who was Qutbuddin Ravandi?
Yes, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Sayyid ibn Abdullah ibn Hussein ibn Hibatullah Ravandi Kashani, known as Qutb Ravandi, is of course one of the great Shia scholars who lived in the 6th Islamic century. He was born in Kashan, one of the cities in this central area of Iran. So some of these scholars like Afandi Isfahani says about him that he was one of the offsprings of Sa'id ibn Hibatullah, the children of him, and he was known as Qutb Ravandi. So he studied in Kashan, and then he went to Qom and of course studied in these two main Islamic cities. And then it is said about him that he died in Qom.
Yes.
And of course he was buried in the holy shrine of Lady Fatima Masuma,
yes,
the daughter of Imam Musa al-Kadhim, alayhi salatu wassalam.
His gravestone is today, we can say, could be seen in the main courtyard.
Of course,
Ivana Aine, or the mirror, yes, we can say, courtyard of Lady Fatima al-Masuma, okay? That's all right. This is about his early life. He was a prolific writer and author, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. Let's talk a little bit about the scholarly life of Qutbuddin Ravandi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, obviously, he was amongst the great Shia scholars. And Ibn Shahr Ashub Mazandarani was his student.
Mm-hmm.
He had, great students as well. The main thing about him is that he was independent,
mm-hmm,
in his scholarly, we can say, like, ideology, thoughts, and perspective that he had about different things. And on top of that, it is said, according to some researches, that he was the first person who introduced the four main sources of, Sharia. For example, in the Shia Islam today, mm-hmm, we say that on top of everything, there is Quran.
Yes.
For the fiqh, we need to go towards Quran. If you don't find anything in Quran, then you need to go towards the narrations of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, right?
Yes.
Or which is Sunnah. After Sunnah, if you don't find anything, you need to go towards the Aql, intellectual. You need to bring intellectual proofs. And after that, the fourth thing at the last is Ijma, where all the ulama or the scholars, they gather, they are, they agree on one thing. So these four things that we have in the fiqh, while, for the Sharia or jurisprudence, these are important, because when a faqih comes and he wants to, extract a rule from the verses or about,
yes,
any issue, he wants to give an idea about that issue, a rule about an issue, he has to first go towards the Quran.
Yes.
It cannot be like, he goes towards the hadith and then the Quran. No. The first thing is Quran. If he cannot find anything, then goes towards the hadith or sunnah. And after that, he goes to aql.
Okay.
The principles of jurisprudence is all about this, that when you don't find anything in hadith and the Quran, then you go towards the usul, like, there are a couple of things,
okay,
which are logically been proved.
Yes.
So he goes towards that. And after that, if even they don't find, they see what the ulama in the, throughout the history, they used to do, for example.
Mm-hmm.
For example, about smoking, we don't have clear verses.
Yes.
There is no hadith. Aql says, sometimes doctor says it is better for the person, sometimes say it is not.
Okay.
So then they go towards Ijma. In Ijma, they see that the scholars never given any fatwa.
Yes.
Or in Islam, we didn't find anything against it. That's why they say, we cannot say anything about smoking, for example, whether it's haram or it's halal. So it is mubah, for example.
That's
but
right.
Obviously it depends on the ideas of the scholars or the fuqaha. So this is one of the things about him, that he was, in his scholarly life, he was independent. And because of his independency in the scholarly ideas that he had, he could talk about this. Even, we had, in his time, we can see like the ulama or the scholars, even at his time, they were, affected by the thoughts of Sheikh Tusi,
yes,
and other scholars.
Yes.
But he did not had such things. On the other hand, we can see his great work, which is Kharaij wal Jara'ih.
I will get to that book. About the main mu'jazat, the miracles of Prophet Muhammad and the Masumin. What is the difference between a mu'jazat by a prophet, and do imams have mu'jazat or not? Because this is a question by some
Karamat
of our,
and mu'jazat.
Yes, by some of our listeners. But before that, Shaykh Rouhani, let's be a little bit more concerned about the main methodology of Qutbuddin Ravandi in tackling different issues, especially fiqh al-muqaran or fiqh al-tatbiqi. Some of our dear listeners might not know what is fiqh al-muqaran. Can you explain it for us?
Yes, it is very nice and interesting that we understand many of the Shiite scholars in the history, for example, like Shaykh Tusi, like this Qutbi Ravandi, and many other ulama of Shia, in the history they were very much expert and professional in studying, not only studying, even teaching
yes.
the fiqh or the jurisprudence of the Shayyo, for example, Ja'fari,
okay.
Hanafi, Shafi'i, Hanbali,
okay.
All these, let's say, different fiqhs that we have or uh-huh. jurisprudences that we have in Islam, they were able to teach these fiqh for their okay. followers.
Very good.
So, and also they were able to, for example, to make comparison. Because there are lots of commonalities and common areas and fields among these, let's say, fiqhi schools
okay.
when it comes to ahkam al-fiqhi. So maybe 70 or some scholars say that even 90% of the ahkam are like common and shared between all these different schools. But of course, there are some percentages of these ahkam which are different.
Yes.
And tashayyu and other, and even among the other, let's say, schools. So fiqh al-muqarana means to make comparison between uh-huh. the different kind of schools.
Yes.
That's why the Shiite scholars sometimes in the history, they try to make this comparison. Yes.
Okay.
That, for example, according to Hanafis, the hukm is like this, according to the Shafi'i, according to, for example, Tashayyu or Ja'fari. But the important point is that the Shiite scholars try to express and explain the authenticity and the truthfulness of the Shiite, for example, teachings and ahkam.
Yes.
Because when you get your hukm of Islam, it is very much important that from what kind of sources you get this hukm.
That's right.
You know, that's why they say that, so since we get our ahkam from Ahlul Bayt, from Amir al-Mu'minin Ali alayhi salatu wasalam,
yes.
and Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein, Imam Sadiq, Imam Baqir, so it is the most authentic source mm-hmm. that is also by the Holy Prophet salawatullahi alayhi wa alayhi. It is mentioned that you have to refer to Ahlul Bayt.
Yes.
So that's why we refer to Ahlul Bayt.
Okay.
And we get our fiqh from Ahlul Bayt. So uh-huh. that's why whatever hukm is issued or fatwa is issued by the Shiite scholars, it is based on the teachings and doctrines of the school of Ahlul Bayt.
That's right.
So that's why they also try to express the truth of or the authenticity of Shiite, let's say, fiqh.
That's
this
right.
is also very much
okay.
important to be mentioned.
Thank you very much. Now let's get to his magnum opus, Al-Kharaj wa-Jara'ih. What does the title mean and what is the main content of this book by Qutbuddin Ravandi?
Well, obviously, the title Kharaj is from the word Khuruj.
Okay.
Which means to exit, or which we can take, or something coming out. The output, basically.
Extraction, can we
extraction
say?
Is from jara'ih.
Jara'ih.
Iktisab. Uh-huh.
Okay.
That is extraction.
Okay.
So basically the miracles that we have seen from the Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salatu wasalam, which they did, this is the kharaij, and after that we have some results from those, you know, miracles, mm-hmm. which is jara'ih.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why he named this book with the kharaij wa jara'ih, which is the book on the miracles and extraordinary, we can say, like, you know, the activities or the things that the Ahlul Bayt maybe have done. So basically this is about this. On the other hand, you know, when we talk about the miracles, it is better to differentiate between the miracle, which is mu'jaza, and yes. karamat, which is extraordinary,
uh-huh.
we can say,
okay.
you know, a work.
Actions versus
work.
Okay.
In today's world, for example, you know, when we see something in the world, for example, blood coming out of the tomb of Imam Hussein, for example. Or,
okay.
All these things, these are not the mu'jiza.
Uh-huh.
This is not a mu'jiza. This is karama.
Karama, okay.
This is something extraordinary.
Yes.
Right? This is not a mu'jiza. Miracle, it has a definition. The miracle is, number one, it should be done by the Prophet
okay.
or the infallible.
Yes.
Number two, it is to challenge the other person that if you can do like this, but he cannot. There's a challenge in it.
So it is temporary.
Yes.
The timing is dedicated to a specific time. Okay.
For example, Hazrat Musa
yes.
Has said to Pharaoh that my Lord brings the sun from east to west.
Mm-hmm.
If you are God, do it the other way.
Yes.
So this is a challenge that you cannot do it. So there is a challenge in it.
Yes.
That if I have done so, you need to do. For example, when Prophet used to make these wells, which were, you know, the water, make the water sweet.
Yes.
But the other who claimed to be the Prophet, like Sulaiman and all those, yes. you know, they couldn't do that.
Yes.
So there's a challenge in
yes.
it. Number one, it should be from an infallible,
yes.
the representative of God. Number two, there should be a challenge. Number three, challenge is known as tahaddi, for example, like
yes.
in the terminology. And number three, it is to make them, you know, to call them or to invite them towards the right path.
Mm-hmm.
That is the goal of this.
Yes.
For example, when Prophet used to bring the tree in the mosque of Medina, he used to order him to come towards me. There were kuffar and mushrikeen over there. It was to make them Muslim because they said, if you do so, we will become Muslim. If you can call this tree, which is in the middle of the mosque, to come towards you, next to you,
yes.
we will become Muslim.
Okay.
So these three aspects should be in there. And number four, if we want to count or as number one, it should be from God. Obviously, God has given them this power. For example, if Musa alayhi salam had this stick, you know, the asa, which used to become a snake or, you know, it used to convert into something. So that was, it has all these four things. Number one, the mu'jiza miracle was to call people towards God,
yes.
one God.
Okay.
It was something extraordinary which people cannot do.
Uh-huh.
And obviously there was a challenge.
Yes.
Why Pharaoh brought those magicians to compete Musa alayhi salam.
Mm-hmm.
Where when Musa alayhi salam threw his stick and it became the snake and it eats all those ropes
yes.
which were, you know, thrown by
yes,
the magicians, they clearly knew that this is not a magic.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So that's the difference.
Okay.
So this is the mu'ajiza. On the other hand, we have karamat. Karamat is to show the high rank of the person or to show the truthfulness of a personality.
Okay.
For example, the way we see the blood every year on the day of Ashura, there is a fresh blood which comes out of, you know, the
okay.
place which is Maqtal, where
yes,
the
yes.
Imam Hussein was martyred.
Yes.
This is to show the truth that, look, mm-hmm. this thing is happening. It is because he is the true,
yes.
you know, representative of God.
Okay.
So therefore, Khutbah Ravandi has brought, you know, the miracles. And in 13 chapters, it is all on 15 chapters.
Yes.
In first 13 chapters, he brought the, you know, the miracles of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and the Ahl Bayt Alayhi Salatu Wasalam.
Yes.
In the 14th chapter, he discussed about the authority of this
yes.
or the proofs. Why there is a mu'jiza and what is the definition.
That's right.
And in the last chapter, he brought the you know, the argument from the Qur'an
mm-hmm.
on the imamat or the leadership of the 12 imams.
Result.
So this was the overall, you know,
okay.
the picture of the
That's
book.
Right. Thank you, my Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi and Shaykh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding the life of Qutbuddin Ravandi and also his outstanding one, Al-Kharaj Wal-Jaraya. It was very kind of you. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi Amal.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.